Why doesn't Red Bull come in a red bowl? So if somebody was like, hey, buddy, we're going to be doing some Jaeger bombs. Could you bring the Red Bull? And the guy's like, sure. And he literally just fucking brought a Red Bull to the party. People would be like, ah, Steve. Scotch. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coffee with Butterscotch, the official podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. We are Butterscotch Shenanigans, a three-brother video game studio. I'm Seth.
And I'm Adam.
Sam isn't here this week, but we'll get to that later. If you're interested in our games, you can find them at games.bscotch.net. You can also join our loving community at forums.bscotch.net. If you want to throw some questions our way for this podcast, you can go to podcast.bscotch.net. Also, a quick warning, this podcast is not for children, youngsters, kids, or babies.
So get off our lawn!
Yeah, if you're one of those things, go away. Okay, first things first.
Nice intro, Seth. You're getting better at this.
Thanks. It's getting real smooth.
Yeah. So the reason that I complimented Seth on his intro skills is because normally our other brother, Sam, does that.
Yeah.
But he's not here.
He's not here because he is in the hospital right now. He underwent a stem cell transplant on Friday, bone marrow stem cell transplant, which is a lot less horrible than it sounds in terms of, you know, pain, and so they don't actually shank you in the bones. It's basically like getting an IV drip.
Well, you also get irradiated.
He did get irradiated, but that's all done. But yeah, he's doing very well. He's feeling good. He's tired and winded because when you don't have a lot of blood, you're kind of oxygen starved. Actually, that's exactly what happens. So anything that you normally do, like just basic physical activity,
is just harder now.
Yeah, it just kind of makes it. Yeah, you're just out of air all the time.
Yeah,
but he hasn't had to get any, you know, blood transfusions yet or anything like that, and all his numbers are looking great. So he's cruising through this thing.
Yeah,
but yeah, so he's still trapped in the hospital for at least a couple more weeks. So it'll still be just the two of us for this podcast and the next probably couple.
Yeah. Well, the next ones are going to be, well, actually the next one, I don't know what's going to happen with that.
The next one, well, I'm going to Colorado this Friday, yeah, and I won't be back till Wednesday. So we're running out of brothers.
I'm not sure if I can solo the podcast.
So we'll probably do the podcast. Maybe we'll just do it late or something. Next week, like on
or
Thursday,
we'll do Friday. It early, like tomorrow or Thursday of this week, and then just hold on to it.
Yeah, we can stockpile that thing and cash in later, like a lot.
We may have to do that, but also the end of next week, we're going to be at Pixel Pop Festival, which you can find at, I believe, pixelpopfestival.com.
That is true. Well, yeah, the next weekend. Yeah,
the weekend after this one coming up.
Yeah, two weekends from now, if you will.
And, yeah. September 12th and 13th, we'll be giving a talk at that thing about starting a game studio, which we have obviously done before. And so we're going to talk about that, I guess. However, we've not actually crafted this talk yet. And as Seth noted, he's going to be gone starting this Friday until next Wednesday. We need to do another podcast somehow magically between now and then. And we need to prepare a talk, and we need to get a whole bunch of Crashlands shit done, which we will talk about in a moment. So it's a little, things are happening.
Time is of the essence. It's always running out, but we got this. So what's been going on this week? I have, for the past 10 days, I've been on a social media purge. I haven't opened up Twitter or Facebook or Reddit. That's social media, right? That counts.
YouTube. Yeah. It's more anti-social media, I think.
But, yeah, but anything, but sure, anything with, you know, comments and that kind of stuff. And man, it has been great. I got nothing else to say about it other than I just feel real good all the time. You know, I mean,
I have not done the same thing. I mean, I don't spend too much time on those anyway. I tend to look at the front page of Reddit like twice a day.
Yeah.
And then I check our Bscotch Twitter feed, which currently consists of mostly just notes that people are following us, which is super boring.
Yeah, that's not very exciting.
No, it is not. But every once in a while, something interesting kind of, you know, pops up in there. So I just, I spend a few minutes a day trying to discover those interesting things, which is probably a waste of time.
It might be, but see, I depend on other, I'm sort of like a, I don't know, I'm like an Amish person who still uses the highways. Like, I'm still getting that information from other people. I'm still benefiting from it, but I don't need to actually do anything.
Let somebody else waste their time on social media.
Let somebody else maintain that stuff. It's going real good. And people tend to be pretty negative in comment sections and stuff like that, but I haven't had to read any of those things. That's going great. And we invented a new word.
Well, we didn't. Seth invented a new word.
Well, yeah, but we're trying to propagate it. And yeah. We're going to need everybody's help with this. The word is slurb.
Slurb. It came about because while we were playing, so we mentioned we've been playing a lot of Rocket League for the past few weeks. There's a frequent occurrence in this game because still somehow we are just terrible at it.
I'm like 50 hours in.
Are you?
Awful.
I don't think I'm quite there, but I've put in my time. But there's this frequently happening occurrence where you hit the ball and it just does this slow, sad waltz that...
Yeah, it just slowly works its way into the goal.
Yeah, and somehow when we were trying to describe this, Seth just called it slurb. He's like, it just slurbed in there. And we're like, holy crap, that's a perfect word.
So I think the formal definition is for something to go slowly and awkwardly into another thing.
Yeah, in a really sort of...
Probably in a negative way.
Yeah, in a really unappealing way.
Yeah.
There's just like something really deeply dissatisfying about the slow...
Like if there's that guy at your office who whenever he comes in to the office in the morning and he just never like gets to his desk and starts getting shit done, you know? He just kind of comes in and just like slurbs his way across the office, chatting with people. And then he kind of hovers around the door to his cube, you know, and then he just slurbs into his chair and then starts typing slowly. there's no word for that.
No.
But now there is. Slurb.
And it's just as gross as it needs to be.
All right, so I have two more. So because I haven't been jumping into random internet threads for 11 days, I've had a lot of time for introspection.
Oh, okay. So what have you learned about yourself?
I haven't learned anything about myself.
Wait, so what did you...
Let's move on. I thought there was a couple things just occurred to me. You ever hear the saying, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step?
I have heard that saying.
And that's supposed to be like a big, like motivational thing.
Yeah, and there's something about like a second pair of footprints or something along...
I think that's about Jesus.
Oh, okay, right.
It kind of occurred to me that there's like 2.1 million more steps to go in a journey of 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
But I guess it's probably important that the saying doesn't focus on that part of it.
Because I think that's the whole point of this saying. But
here's the thing. A journey of 1,000 miles doesn't begin with a single step. It ends after 2.1 million steps. Right? Like,
true.
I mean, it begins, but it's not a journey of 1,000 miles until it's done.
Until it was a journey in the past.
Right? Because otherwise you're just wandering aimlessly. Or if you only take a single step, you haven't started a journey of 1,000 miles.
Yeah, that's true.
All you've done is taken a step.
So I guess every step is the beginning of a journey.
Every step is the beginning of a journey of 1,000 miles until you stop going that direction.
Yeah. Well, but then once you stop going that direction, you're just going on another journey of 1,000 miles in a different direction. Which should make you feel great about your progress in life, so long as you're taking steps.
How many journeys of 1,000 miles have you gone on this week? A shitload.
So I guess also, if you do actually go and complete a journey of 1,000 miles, you've actually completed something like, or you've actually begun something like 1,000,000 journeys of 1,000 miles. So you've gone on 1,000,000 journeys just by going on one.
And you only finished one.
Yeah.
I mean, great success rate, Steve.
Yeah,
probably, way to slurp you probably your way need, through that one.
You probably need to take your ratio of successful journeys on into account for that.
Yeah, just pick a direction and go.
Yeah.
Quit starting new goddamn journeys all the time.
That's fair.
So Before we get to the studio update, I had one last thing. I just have to get this off my chest.
Okay, what's up?
Okay, so whenever you see a dog and they're like really happy to see you, what if they're just being sarcastic? And you would have no way of knowing. And really, every dog is actually kind of a dick. And they're just sarcastically acting as if they want to see you, but you have no way of knowing.
Right.
And really, they don't like us at all. In fact, what about that?
I mean, it's possible. I'm not sure dogs are capable of just about any kind of.
Well, that's what we think, but they're so good at being sarcastic.
That's true. They may just be unbelievably good at sarcasm.
They're probably really, really smart, but they're just so goddamn sarcastic that that we don't even know. They're just, oh, sure, I'll just sniff around. Yeah, I'm a dog. Why not? Why don't I just sniff everything? That's what I like to do. Sure.
So they're sort of hipsters, I guess.
Yeah.
This is an interesting theory. So what made you think this what might be happening? Did your dog do something that?
No, it's just it just kind of occurred to me that we have no idea what these animals are actually thinking. You know, we have to just interpret, right? You know, the way they communicate is through body language. And so we like to think of them as like, you know, they're very open and honest because they don't have a concept of lying. We just read what they are doing. Like they wag their tail. We're like, oh, that's happy. But we don't really know whether or not they're actually mocking us.
Everything they do is actually mocking.
Yeah.
I'll put that as possible. That seems more like something a cat would do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but maybe I that's would just not, what dogs want to think. I would not put it past
the cat. I mean, the cats are obviously sarcastic.
Yeah.
But dogs, you know, who knows? Who knows what's going on in that gourd?
Yeah, maybe just dogs are assholes, just like cats.
Yeah. But, I mean, aside from all that stuff, we've been making great progress on Crashlands for the past
year. Yes, we have. We've been crushing it since the last podcast.
So what's happened?
Where were we on the last podcast? I believe we had just started trying to get cloud saving to work.
We were integrating Bscotch ID.
We were integrating Bscotch ID, and then Seth was bug crushing. But those were the two things we were really focusing on. Sam was mostly out of commission in terms of work, but he still somehow managed to create a new boss for the Savannah.
He did,
which is the first biome, the first region of the game. What's the boss called? It's like a mushroom.
Barry Diggs.
Barry Diggs, right.
It's basically, so the Tendrom, they worship Marla, which is like their plant god. Yeah,
so the Tendrom, they're one of the species of NPC that you meet in the game.
They're basically flying plant goats.
Yeah.
And they worship this plant concept called Marla. And Marla has these roots and flowers and things that are blossoming everywhere. They tend to congregate around those. But they also have a concept of sort of a devil creature, which is sort of like a mushroom clam thing named Barry Diggs. So
why is it named Barry Diggs? There must be some story behind that.
It just kind of appeared that way.
It's kind of happened. Fair enough.
Yeah. Barry is a boss fight that is in the game. Or it will be couple days.
The art, yeah. So Sam got the art all generated. So that boss, which actually covers now the three bosses besides the main boss, but it covers the three bosses in the Savannah. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. And then Seth completed all the hookup of the animation and the battle sequences and stuff for
Blockstock.
For Blockstock, another one of those bosses. And is in the process right now of reanimating the Baconweed Fairy, who we talked about a long time ago, or I guess seemingly a long time ago.
I think we tweeted. I think there's a tweet of the Baconweed Fairy.
I think there
Fairy
may
animation.
Even be a blog post.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. There's stuff about the Baconweed Fairy all over the place, actually. The Baconweed Fairy turned into a crazy, horrific creation because the animation tool we were using didn't quite work exactly. So all of a sudden her arms would be detached and like
attached,
moving it,
yeah, attached
90
to
degree
her
angles
stomach
or something,
or she'd
weird
be rotated laying on the ground like twisting around right. violently with her jaw popped
yeah,
off.
It was like horror movie kind of stuff, which was funny because actually for a while she kind of worked in the game. So she was the first boss that was in the Savannah. And it kind of worked, and all of a sudden it all fell apart and hasn't been redone until now. But anyway, so Seth's redoing that, and then he'll rig up this new boss that Sam made, and then all the bosses are done.
And then we're ready for an internal Savannah playthrough.
Yeah. And then the other thing is we got Beastcatch ID is now all integrated, so that's all assembled. We don't have perks and things hooked up to Crashlands yet. We'll probably be adding those later on during the beta. But all the functional aspects of Beastcatch ID are there. And the big thing we just finished today is now the cloud saving, so the whole cross device and whatever thing where you get to sync your save to our servers and then go download it somewhere else. That is all now 100% functional.
And we've tried it, and it mostly works.
Right now, it totally works. Earlier, a couple hours ago, it was just mostly working. So we're making some great progress. And speaking of bosses, we actually changed the name of the main villain.
Oh, yeah. We did. Q. Yeah. So we didn't know this until people accused us of theft.
This seems to happen with some frequency.
Apparently Star Trek has an alien named Q, which for starters...
An alien supervillain.
For starters, who in Star Trek isn't an alien? I mean, let's be real about that.
Who isn't an alien, period?
Like, that's it depends on your point of view.
Relative to somebody.
Yeah, we're all aliens somewhere. So Q was Quetzalcoatl, which was an homage to Towel Fight of the Gods way back when. And Q was originally a god. And then our concept of the Viru, which is the alien race that Q belongs to, developed over time. And then we rebranded these god characters as technologically advanced aliens. And we thought, people can't pronounce Quetzalcoatl, so we'll just call him Q. But as soon as that happened, then we started getting comments from people about how we were taking the name of this Star Trek alien named Q.
Well, I mean, as we all know, if something has a name, no matter
nothing
how...
Nothing else can have that name.
Even if it's just a single damn letter, nothing else can have
but
that
name. But
the
good news is, we have a new name for the villain.
That's even better.
Which literally nothing else has.
Yeah, we Googled it.
We Googled it. There are zero results just in the entire universe. His name is Hugo Duco.
Yeah.
Hugo Duco. Hugodooko. Lots of O's.
I think that's right. Lots of
O's.
O's
are
for
evil.
Sure.
The most evil of the vowels. So we're pumped about that. We got to update a whole bunch of our literature. But also, so Sam has been adding a crap load of side quests to the game,
yeah.
Which I haven't even gotten to go and play him and check him out, but he's been posting random updates to our chat, and we have cool things like there's this Tendrom named Grandmammy, and she has a bunch of quadrupus buddies who she served in the war with way back in the day.
Is this the quadrupus war with Pete?
Well, or who knows? I don't know. I don't want to say, no spoilers.
Fair enough.
Each of those quadrupi has a quest chain that they will send you on, and you can do favors for them in order to get some pretty sweet stuff. So we have all this kind of stuff going on. We got some little like cities and villages being developed with a bunch of populated with a bunch of NPCs that have all kinds of stories to them, and we're hoping that these side quests, that there will be dozens and dozens of hours worth of things to do in these. It's still being fleshed out, but it's really moving along.
It's coming along. Seth's going on vacation starting on Friday. All this crap is happening. We're moving along really fast. And
crappening.
The crappening. And so our goal is to, by the time Seth leaves on Friday, to have everything in place in the Savannah, the first biome.
For an internal beta.
For an internal playthrough of that biome. Which we'll do over the weekend. So Seth will do it while he's on the airplane and stuff. Sam and I will do it just constantly. We'll then get our first list of all the things that need to be dealt with. So it'll only take us a few days to get through the game. And then we'll get the list of all of the changes we want to make. And then we'll kind of power through those as fast as we can. Hopefully that's only a few days of work, unless something is horribly broken. And then at that point, we're ready for the beta. So we're just really close. Like, we keep on saying we're close. And it's constantly true. But we are just so close right now.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that, when a game takes 2 years to make and you only have 3 months left, you're super close.
Yeah.
Right.
That is
a fact. It's like, that's still a long time.
True.
In general.
We're not saying we have 3 months left.
No, I'm not saying that. It was an example.
Right.
Completely unrelated.
Completely unrelated. We certainly have some time left. And we're not going to put a date on it yet because, as we've been noting, we don't know how fast things are going to happen. And we're at that point now where there are just a handful of things left that have to happen, but each one could end up taking a day or 5 days longer than we expect.
Yeah, every now and then you bump into these work-stopping bugs that just crush your entire workday and you can't figure it out and track it down.
Yeah.
So we can't anticipate those, but I'm stocked up on Red Bull. I'm not going to the gym all week.
You have been drinking a lot of damn Red Bull.
I am just completely, I'm doused. Like, I'm sopping wet. I'm just covered in Red Bull right now.
Gross.
Without any more ado, I got to throw that over. Right.
Skip the ado.
That's how we do it. Yeah, let's get to some fan questions.
All right.
All right. Well, let's start with the Cacti God, who asks, when making a new game, who is the first to hear about it? I'm not totally sure what this means.
Maybe, so think of a little while ago. So Seth prototyped this game that currently internally is called Entropy, but will probably have a name change by the time, if it ever actually goes out into the wild. We were prototyping this game. We were working on it while Sam was in the hospital because we just needed some other stuff to do. And then we got it hooked up to Beastcotch ID because it was a multiplayer game. All of a sudden, and some, because we were on the friend lists of a bunch of players in the Beastcotch ID network, and so all of a sudden people saw the name of that game pop up in their friends list, and they're like, "What the hell is this? We didn't know you were making another game." And more importantly,
neither did we.
You should be working on Crashlands, of course. So, but anyway, so I imagine maybe that's the kind of thing he's talking about, like where all of a sudden in that case, people who were, you know, in our friends queue suddenly heard about a new game we were making.
Well, those are definitely some of the first, I think.
Yeah, but mostly what happens is, you know, our family members are the first to find out.
Yeah, I was going
to
say our wives.
Our wives first. And then what happens? I guess it kind of depends on the game and how much we get into it. Because we have a whole bunch of prototypes that we get started with. And typically, actually, Seth will start the prototype and then tell us about it like a week later, maybe. So if it sounds interesting. And then we'll kind of play around with the idea, and then if we get into it, we'll work on it a bit, and then, you know, then our wives end up hearing about it because we're talking about the problems we've been facing. It tends to not go further than that, actually, for most things that we start making.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that of all the prototypes and game ideas and game projects we work on, or what, maybe 9 out of 10 of them never go anywhere.
Yeah.
So we tend to kind of keep them internal and keep them pretty quiet because we don't want a situation. I mean, we actually had a thing after Quadrupus where we had a game concept called Captain.
Oh, right.
Where you were, it was kind of like a space RPG kind of a game. But we worked on it for a little while, and then we switched over to Extreme Sloth Cycling because we just weren't really feeling it. But we had already announced the game, and we had talked it up a little bit.
So people were getting interested and excited about it.
People were writing articles about it, and then it just disappeared.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you look that up, you can find it. You can find some GIFs, and we had some artwork done. And
well, actually, Narwhal Online is pretty similar to that because we did that for a game jam, so it was just for fun. But then we started talking about turning that into a game, and we're even actually part of the original timeline was we were going to make that before we finished Crashlands.
Yeah.
And we announced that and everything else, and then all of a sudden that's not what we did. And so
over time we've learned our lesson of we should keep things pretty quiet until we are really, really confident that we have a good concept that we're going to put out.
Yeah.
Definitely our wives know everything though, because, you know, that's how that works.
Yeah. Because we got to talk about our day at the end of the work day, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ulnar Evern asks, how scripted will the main campaign of Crashlands be? Proportions of outposts, how you position them, and all that.
So for those of you who are new to Crashlands and to this podcast, what Ulnar Evern is talking about here is that we have this thing called the Crashlands Creator that allows you to make what we call outposts, which can be kind of whatever you want, but it's something that exists out in the world, like a bunch of floors and some chests and a placed NPC.
Yeah, you can just think about an outpost as like a handmade place.
It's a handmade place. And so what we're still working on in the game is basically that part, is making the actual story of the game, which consists of a whole bunch of those, you know, handcrafted outposts, and then the NPCs that live in them, and then the quests that those NPCs give you to allow you to unlock things and do interesting stuff.
And the style of game that Crashlands is that, you know, it's an open world crafting game.
Yeah.
So So we actually have a really cool sort of an interplay between the story system and the progression system, which is in order to move forward, you need to interact with the story because you have to talk to people who will teach you how to build things that allow you to get more powerful so you can move ahead.
Right.
But in order to build the things that they teach you how to build, you have to go out into the open world and collect all those materials and fight the creatures and all that stuff. The story just gives you more reasons to go out into the world and explore.
Yeah, it just gives you stuff to do while you're not actually just building things and focusing on exactly. The crafting part.
Exactly. So in terms of how scripted it is, I'm not quite sure what that means specifically.
Well, it is quoted, so probably whatever we want it to be.
I think it's more of a question about like, is it a very open world thing or is it very linear right. or that sort of thing? And the story is, you know, it's linear but branching because there's lots of side quests and stuff. And you need to engage with the story to move through the crafting and the progression and all that stuff. But you can just wander off and explore infinitely in any direction at any time.
And even when you are doing the linear story, you'll still spend most of your time out exploring an open world. And so most of your time, even in the kind of the linear story part of the game, is actually spent not doing scripted stuff.
And I guess a good analog would be something like Skyrim, where,
or Fallout.
Yeah, where there's clearly a story, but there's this huge world out there, and if you just go out and look around, you will stumble across some things that you didn't know were there, and you'll find all kinds of cool stuff. And if you talk to certain NPCs, then it'll pop up entirely new opportunities for you to go and get cool new things. So there's a lot to it. So how scripted is it?
It's both really scripted and not very scripted at all, actually, just because of the two ways you can interact with the game.
Yeah, but hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, and Sam would be able to answer this better because he's the one actually building the entirety of the story part of the game. So maybe he can give us a different kind of answer when he actually rejoins us in the podcast.
All right, so Cloudmere asks, what are the chances that we get to see some more merch, Crashlands or otherwise? I could use some butterscotch in my wardrobe.
Oh man, merch.
Oh, so this is something that we, so there's a problem with merch, which is one
of, there
are a
few problems with merch.
The biggest problem is one of cost, both in terms of time and upfront investment. In a lot of cases, so we've looked into things like action figures, like Flux Dabes action figures.
Yeah.
Like little vinyl figurines, plushies, t-shirts, a lot of this kind of stuff. And for a lot of the really cool merch, like tangible things like action figures, you need to order them in production runs.
Yeah, meaning 10,000 at a time.
Meaning, yeah, you have to get them in a huge bulk. Now the question is, where do you put them?
Well, there,
do you ship
there's
them?
There's also another question, which is, where do you get the money to buy that much stuff at once?
Right. We don't have the cash in the bank to do that kind of a thing. Especially, you know, if we were to spend all of our money on action figures and we wouldn't know whether or not we could sell them, then
that'd be a bad business.
There's also the issue of, we don't necessarily want to spend our days selling action figures. We want to make games. And so, the only time that becomes feasible is if we can bring another person onto the team to manage this kind of thing.
Or hire a company and we can, but the company will only, you know, we can only make that deal with somebody if they can make enough money to warrant them making that deal. So there has to be a large enough volume being sold that they can take their cut. They can cover the cost of everything and yeah. Everybody still ends up, you know, on top by the time it's all done.
Having said that, we are looking at some options for some butterscotch t-shirts, where we're trying to come up with a concept of a t-shirt that has the characters from all of our games. So we'll have Hardik, Tack, Bingo, Bella, Flux, Juicebox, the Juice Jockeys from Roid Rage and Flop Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll all be basically just like chilling in a cool pose or something on the t-shirt. And then it'll say Butterscotch Shenanigans on it. We don't even have a concept of that yet, but we have been talking to our box artist, Eric Hibbler, about putting that together for us.
Yeah.
T-shirts are cool because a lot of companies will allow you to do custom runs where or on-demand printing. So instead of us being like, oh, we have to buy 10,000 t-shirts, instead we just get the design to them, and then whenever somebody orders that shirt, they just print it right there on the spot and send it off.
Well, the other part of that too is we have to find a place that has a high quality enough shirt and then sells it for a reasonable enough price that it's actually worth it to our fans to buy that stuff. Because I think for a while there was some merch. The store might even still be up. I don't know.
We had some merch through Zazzle, but it was like $24, $25 a t-shirt or something.
And the t-shirts
like that.
Were just okay.
Yeah, it was okay. Like they kind of think they wore out really easily. And we also had some like coffee with butterscotch mugs. But again, those mugs were like $19. It's just like a regular mug.
Yeah.
With printing on it. It's not a $19 item.
And I think we got what, like a dollar of it?
That was with us putting like a 50 cent or a dollar profit.
Yeah. So like, it was just horribly overpriced.
It's not like we were marking it up like crazy.
Yeah, it was just really overpriced. So, but there's a good reason for that, which is that it was being printed on demand, so we couldn't take advantage of you know, buying stuff in bulk. But we do, you know, going back to the action figures and stuff. We do totally want to do that, and we totally intend to do it if Crashlands is successful enough that we can afford the upfront cost for that, and we can find somebody to distribute it for us and all that kind of stuff, then we're totally going to jump into that fray.
Yeah, we have a very clear business trajectory in terms of the kinds of things we want to get into, and merch is number one on that list.
Yeah.
So it's mostly just a matter of time and money. So
true fact.
We will get there. Either now or within the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Nia asks, if the bros were an animal, what animal would each of you be? Answers limited to dragons, phoenixes. Wait, it's limitless. Lizard people. Woo!
That was that
last part.
Yeah, it's W-E-W-W-W, which I didn't know what that meant, but now...
Or it's woo.
Woo.
Lizard people, woo.
Seth, what would you be? Or wait, do we have to choose for ourselves or for each other? Or both?
Well, I mean, we know that for starters, Sam would be a rabbit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he's been infused with the essence of a rabbit.
But he already is an animal. I guess that is the question, though. If they were
the question
an animal.
Is, if you were an animal, what would you be? And obviously, Sam is now an animal.
Sam is an animal, and he's a rabbit, so that answers that question.
Yeah, but I'd go with human. Yeah, it's one of my top animals.
That's true. So if we were an animal, and we are because we're humans, we're taking too much of a programmer approach to this question, I think.
Yeah, if it's square, rhombus, whatever. otherwise, probably a rhinoceros.
Ew. But then some jerk would just kill you and hack off your horn.
I'll get shanked and then my horn cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah, what animal has just like a really good... life.
Probably
maybe a giant tortoise.
A giant tortoise. Yeah.
You just get to slurp around and eat plants, you know.
And then you basically live forever.
You live for 200 years. Nothing can fuck with you because
but I think you
have an enormous shell.
I think your life also just moves very slowly though, because I mean sure you get to live for 100 years, but you spend most of your time slowly slurping around. Everything that you do is in the slurping fashion. So I don't know. You probably only experience like a good week of life.
I get the sense that tortoises experience time at like three times the normal rate. Like for them, they feel like they're just moving at pretty good speed, and everything else around them is just super
exactly.
fast.
Exactly. So what that means
like a hummingbird.
Right. So what that means is they actually have very little life for the relative to the extent of it.
Yeah, but they're so chilled out.
That's true.
You know,
might as well have a shorter chilled out life.
A giant,
what
is that, like a Galapagos tortoise or something?
That is a kind of tortoise.
That's the kind I would be.
Yeah.
One of those 200, 400, whatever pounders.
interesting. I guess I would try to avoid humans because those kill you all the time if you're a non-human animal. Well, actually, even if you're a human animal, if you're anything, humans will kill you in all likelihood.
Unless you're some kind of horrible deep sea.
Yeah, that's
right.
Exactly.
Really,
so I was
going to
go with
finding
a deep sea something or other. Maybe a deep sea female lanternfish.
Mm.
I think that's what I would be. That is a pretty good life right there.
Yeah, a male lanternfish is not that good.
No. Well, then you just become...
You're basically a living testicle.
Well, you are once you... What's for those of you who aren't familiar?
I mean, that's true of humans too.
Also true. If you're not familiar with the lanternfish, there is a great oatmeal comic that sounds like the oatmeal.com. If you're not familiar with that website, but he has a comic about the lanternfish, which sounds like a joke, but it isn't. It's really how lanternfish work, which is that they live so deep down in the pitch black ocean where there's almost nothing alive because there's not enough stuff to support life, that their numbers are tiny, but they're distributed over a huge, huge area, and they can't
in three dimensions,
and they can't really find each other. And so on the rare instances that they do, they basically have to mate. Like, it's just what has to happen. And the males are these tiny little fish and the females are huge.
So the question is, what happens if the female isn't ready to mate when she meets a male?
And so what happens is, well, not only that, it's she wants to be able to produce eggs multiple times and, you know, all of that.
Exactly.
And so what happens is the male just basically latches on and then over time just fuses. Like, the body literally just fuses with the
female. And then their jaw melts into the female lanternfish's flesh.
Until all that's left is basically fish balls.
All that's left is a testicle.
Yeah.
In a like a bag.
So then it just supplies sperm so that they can make babies forever. Which is why I would not be a male lanternfish. But being a female, you're pretty safe, you know, way down deep. There's nothing out there that's gonna get you. You're a relatively top predator. Kind of boring.
On the flip side though, anytime you come across another lanternfish, if it's a male, they're just gonna bite you and turn into a testicle.
That's true.
So You're gonna have a lot of that to deal with.
Yeah,
but you know, I think
deep sea octopi? Because that'd be a pretty.
Yeah, that's what I was. That's what I was saying. Octopi are brilliant.
Yeah.
Or octopuds, whatever the plural is.
Octopodes.
Yeah, octopi are freaking brilliant. They can open jars. Yeah, the real problem with being any kind of an animal is suddenly you're subject to nature, which means you're probably going to be horribly killed by either
unless
a person
you're a top predator.
Or you're going to be eaten by something. Yeah. So yeah, it's a tough life being an animal.
Indeed.
But Galapagos tortoise and female lanternfish and rabbit.
Speaking
of rabbits.
Oh yeah, Scotchty asks, Chauncey the rabbit, discuss.
It's pretty pushy. It's pretty demanding.
A little pushy.
Let's discuss Chauncey the Rabbit.
Well, so what Scotchty is referring, this was before my time in Butterscotch, not as a person who exists, but in Butterscotch.
It was before Butterscotch, really.
Oh, that's true, actually.
Came fully into fruition. I mean, it was a Butterscotch game, but Sam and I were still working at another company at the time.
Was this after Gerblins or before Gerblins?
It was before.
So this is old school Butterscotch.
Yeah, Chauncey the Rabbit was a game that Sam and I made over like 2 weeks in evenings and weekends. And it was a side-scrolling running game where basically you were this rabbit and you had to run through this like obstacle course as many times as possible before you got murdered by Kismet. The rabbit god
who would crush you with a hammer, if I recall.
Who would crush you with a hammer. So he had a slot machine made of his teeth. His teeth were a slot machine. And you collected luck on your way to see
him. It was pretty dark because Chauncey the rabbit didn't have
any hands.
Because
his front paws were cut off and they were bandaged. So he had like stump arms because somebody had stolen his luck. And so he was seeking out Kismet, the god of luck, to try to replenish his luck supply. So Chauncey is running through this 2D side-scrolling obstacle course, and he would encounter things like mirrors that he had to not break, ladders he had to jump over and not go under, black cats that couldn't cross his path.
I recall a lot of salt shakers.
Oh yeah, salt. You had to collect salt. Because when you throw salt over your shoulder, that gives you luck. There's horseshoes, four-leaf clover. So there's all kinds of – there's lucky items, and then there's things that are trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Or I should say take your luck away. As you go through the obstacle course, by the time you get to the end, you have lost luck by bumping into the bad shit and gained luck by picking up the good shit. And when you talk to Kismet, then your luck balance will manipulate his slot machine teeth. And yeah. And if you are super unlucky, then it really knocks your chances down. And if he gets a triple hammer on his slot machine teeth, then he crushes you to death with a hammer.
And then you have lost, I believe, right?
And that's it. That's the end of the game. Then you're done. So the goal is to get through as many of these obstacle courses as possible with it before getting crushed. And each one is a little bit longer and you go a little bit faster.
And there are a whole bunch of modifiers. So you can actually get like a rocket, like rocket boots or something. And I don't know. I have very vague recollection of this.
So game. What Kismet did with his teeth, so he would smash you. The other things that would happen was his teeth would turn into these modifiers that would change, that would affect your next run.
Right.
One of them might be like you get injected with steroids and then you're running super fast. One is you're tired, which is literally your inside of a tire and you're rolling. Right. Sometimes there'll be like ice. There were like 48 or 50 different modifiers that would affect each run.
Yeah, I mean, there was really actually quite a bit of stuff in that game.
There was quite a lot of stuff. The problem.
Yeah, so the question, Seth, is what happened to Chauncey the Rabbit?
What happened to Chauncey the Rabbit was, I don't know. I mean, it was our first game. It had a lot of rough edges and it was not balanced very well. It was, I mean, because it was our first game, we had this idea like, oh, we'll just make it and put it out there and boom, like money.
Yeah, people will play it and we'll,
We didn't promote it, and then we lost our Java key store file, so we couldn't update it anymore. And it was a series of train wrecks, which is what you can expect for the very first game that you make. The concept was kind of goofy. I think there's something, like there might be something there.
Yeah, well, and it was fun. It just, it suffered enough from some control scheme problems and things that it got frustrating. Not because it was designed to be frustrating, but because it wasn't, which is...
Because of bugs.
Because of bugs and things.
Yeah, there's also a problem. Like, I didn't understand device resolutions very well at that time. And so, on some devices you would play, and there was just tons of stuff on the screen at once. And it was really super zoomed out and really small, and you could see forever, and it ran really slowly. And on other devices, you could see almost nothing at all, depending on how... what you're. Yeah, so it had some kinks. Yeah,
but it did. I believe it was the sort of, spiritual precursor to sloth cycling.
Yeah, the idea of a rabbit with his hands cut off with bandaged stumps running through some kind of an obstacle course. That remained.
Was Chauncey the Rabbit the main character in Sloth Cycling, or is that a different rabbit entirely?
I think we did call him Chauncey. Yeah,
it must be.
But I'm not sure if that's going to persist.
Yeah, we may change, so that game's probably going to still exist, the sloth cycling game, but it may have different characters in it than it currently does, except for obviously the sloth, because sloth cycling is too awesome to not have.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably just make it with just the sloth and forget about
that's
the rabbit,
true actually,
and somehow make it into a sloth racing game.
Yeah, that would be cool.
All right, so I think we got time for, let's do one more question.
Sure, let's hit it up,
which is pretty good one to end on. It's by Racing for the Finish, who asks, knowing the universe might implode on itself due to sheer awesomeness, would you ever consider recording the audio and video for Coffee with Butterscotch and placing it on YouTube? Thanks for the super sweet podcast and keep up the hard work. What a nice question.
That is a nice question. Thanks, Racing for the Finish.
Or rather, the question was okay, but the compliments at the end were great. Right.
So what the answer to that is, we've been trying to figure out how to make our podcast more, I guess, broadly accessible and give it a wider reach. Obviously, right now things are in weird flux because Sam isn't around. We're just neck deep in developing Crashlands. There's kind of some weird stuff that makes it hard for us to pay attention and try to advance this thing more than just actually doing it. Doing a video based part of it is something that we have talked about and would like to do. There are just various technical problems, like the fact that we don't all live in the same place.
Yep, there's that. There's also video editing. You know, we do edit the audio a little bit to kind of like truncate it a little bit and cut out some silences and that sort of thing, which means if we edited the audio, we would need to also edit the video, which takes quite a bit longer.
Video editing sucks. It's easy to make a recording that sounds good in terms of quality, that doesn't seem amateurish, even if you are an amateur. But it's very hard to make a video that doesn't seem amateurish. So it's something we want to do, but it's going to take enough of our time to do it that we're going to wait until things have settled down with Sam's hospital stuff and with Crashlands being launched.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and revisit it.
I think we might put the podcast audio onto YouTube as a just the audio files, maybe with a cool image or something.
Yeah.
As a playlist, just to help people find it, because, you know, not a lot of people are just like out browsing SoundCloud.
Yeah, I think YouTube is a lot more accessible to people than podcast listings. Yeah,
so we will get YouTube videos of the audio, but not of video.
Yeah, which is less awesome than what you're asking for.
it's way less awesome. But yeah, the time commitment to making a video, it would basically mean that we would have to knock the frequency of Coffee with Butterscotch down to maybe like once a month or something, because it would take probably a whole day to get everything ready to go
easily
up onto YouTube.
Yeah,
I mean, we would get that time down with practice, but man, that would,
yeah, ideally really we would start doing something like that after we have raised enough capital to hire somebody to kind of do like a general take care of things kind of person,
you know. A general take care of things kind of person.
Yeah, whatever.
It's
a manager of the stuff that has to get done. You know, whatever that job is, I don't know. But if we had somebody who could kind of, you know, do all kinds of miscellaneous tasks like edit our videos and that kind of thing, then all of a sudden...
Basically an intern.
Basically an intern. Then all of a sudden all these issues of...
We're not taking applications.
No, we're not. But of all the things that we want to do that take away time from game development, all of a sudden we wouldn't have to worry about it, so...
Exactly.
Yeah, but we're not there yet.
Not yet. All right, you guys. Well, thank you very much for all the questions. And this has been Coffee with Butterscotch. And again, if you would like to get in on the Q&A action, head over to podcast.bscotch.net and throw some questions our way. You can also vote for other people's questions. So if you want to sway the discussion in one way or another, feel free
to
distribute your votes. And otherwise, we'll see you guys over at forums.bsketch.net. And we'll catch you next week. Peace.
Goodbye.